Chapter 16. Time has already run out. Dragon is impatient, primed for battle, and yet still solace imprisons him. He strides down the dark ways, his shoulder guards scratching against the overhanging roofs, hunting. This far down, things would normally be crowded. Multitudes live down here, whole spawn families of the unchanged, eking out meager snatches of existence in the stink and the cold. He used to come down here with Slurt, who liked these places, and they would explore the farthest reaches together.
"This is where I do my best work,"
the putrefier had always said, grinning in the gloom.
"These people, incubators, all of them."
Dragon is moving faster now. The empty halls echo from the wet tread of his boots, for the inhabitants have been herded into landers and sent down to the surface. Some will not survive the journey. Many more will die before they get anywhere close to the walls, but they will each absorb a round or two before they do. That is the calculus in these things. A single round, manufactured at cost to the enemy, is of greater value than a human life, created without thought within a fertile sump of pointlessness. Dragon wonders if Vorx approves of that exchange, or whether all that cant about the god and their high purpose is just so much bilge fodder when the necessities of battle call. The signs are here, now. There is fresh blood on the walls, black and glimmering under the sweep of his helm lumens. He can smell the beginnings of the spore, machine oils fused with the oversweet stink of mutation. An hour ago, he heard noises, too. Big, echoing bangs, like iron beams being slammed into unyielding decking. This is another insult, this errand. A part of him almost refused, but to make the challenge now at this juncture feels wrong. There is already too much in motion, too many things he doesn't understand. There can be no argument with this battle, and so the only objective remaining is to play his part in it, to win glory in the eyes of the Unbroken, who are yet unpersuaded by his talents. That is the truest course, the patient one. Those who doubt him doubt his impetuosity, so he must demonstrate his ability to play the long game, too. The smell grows stronger. The copper taint of new slaying becomes intense. The bulkheads around him are slippery with fear. Dragon guesses that even before the Unchanged were rounded up and sent stumbling into their transports, they avoided this place. There are many monsters in the dark and the deep, but some are worse than others. He feels his knife slide against the puffy flesh of his killing hand. He does not draw his pistol with the other one. Such a weapon is of little use here. But he goes more warily, sensing closeness. These are gaping places, chambers that swell and resound, their ceilings lost in fly-thick clouds, their floors knee-deep in oily water. One day, he will understand the need for this grime and gunge. He will revel in it and see it as a badge of identity. He remembers what Typhus told him on the Terminus Est.
"He never let us clean the filth from our armor. Over time, we stopped wanting to."
That must be how it begins. First, you ignore it. Then you accept it. Then, finally, you are defined by it. He hears a sound, a faint sunk down, hiss through such clogged oxygen arteries that respiration must surely be an impressive achievement. Dragon halts, taut as a hamstring, looking into the wall of darkness.
"Unsleeping,"
he calls out, and the word echoes from the columns and the vaults around him. For a long moment, punctuated only by the heavy drum of his heartbeats, nothing. Then, far off, at the end of this great hall, something moves. It is bigger, far bigger than it ought to be, even for one of its cursed kind. Solace is a fecund place, stuffed with rotting meats and nutrient-rich fluids, its airways viscous with the changing harmonics of the demonic. All things grow here, sucking in the fungoid and the decaying, slowly becoming just another tumor on the face of this withered ship corpse. The thing moves, shifting one massive leg, and Dragon sees the expanse of dark grey flesh spilling over the joints and cables. There is more of it than there was the last time. Every time it grows a little more. A pair of tiny eyes blink. Those eyes are the worst thing, sunk within a harrowed face, almost entirely lost behind a nest of rusted cabling. They are red, wholly bloodshot, with matte black irises. They do not focus well. They seem almost independent of one another, as if the mind controlling them has begun to lose the last grips of control.
I do not know you,
comes a voice from the gloom, high up, muffled by matted gunk over its gigantic vox emitters.
You do, Naum, says Dragon,
holding his ground. It is rare that he is dwarfed by anything, but this mass of twisted organics and galaxy-old ceramite has become bloated beyond any reason. Towering, thrust out, as misshapen and ill-made as an infant's first scratchings at construction.
We fought together, remember? On Urveb!
The eyes blink. Tears run down from them, pale and twinkling in the faint lumen flash. The creature shifts on its center of gravity, a fraction of movement that makes pistons sigh, and more of its face emerges into Dragon's helm beam. Narm's face structure is much as it must have been 10,000 years ago. The bone is visible in places where the last of the skin has flaked off, but there are sinews and gristles still clinging on, gilding the profile with a faint vestige of old humanity. On an Imperial Walker sarcophagus, that face would have been locked away, shielded by a frontal plate, as if embarrassed by the things they do to their fallen. Here, the faces are kept proudly on display, surrounded by a high collar and disfigured by the random insertion of gurgling pipework. All that remains of Naum of Barbarus cannot be forgotten, but becomes a badge of failure to look out once more on the battlefield.
Urveb,
Naum hisses. The voice is very soft, very deep, generated in worn-out boxes slung somewhere in that cavernous chest cavity and piped through clogged speaker mores.
No. Hungry.
It takes another step, a single, heaving, hesitant step, and it is as if the entire wall before Dragon has detached and come swinging for him.
We are above another world,
Dragon says, avoiding the urge to speak faster. Naum will not be seeing any of this as he sees it. Even Vorx, his mind rotted by devotion, sees the world of the physical with more clarity than this one. Naum blinks again. Lines of dry brown staining run down his chin, and there is a stray human finger there, dangling from his collar on a last thread of sinew.
Am I asleep? Naum asks.
You know the answer to that, says Dragon patiently.
This wretch ought to be asleep. All of his kind ought to be chained down, locked away, dosed with soporifics and dream suppressants, only roused when their prodigious killing power is required. Others of his order do as they are supposed to, staving off complete madness through the blissful imposition of tranquilization, and only having to contend with the horror of living for those few brief hours of bloodletting. But Naum does not sleep. Something went wrong with him, and now he cannot. He has been awake for a long time, for more than 9,000 years, so they say. Given that, the fact that he can speak at all is something of a miracle. One sent from the god, no doubt.
Eat. You,
Naum says, licking bony lips with her black tongue. Dragon can see that he has been weeping a lot.
Make planet fall here, Naum, Dragon says calmly. The casket is waiting. Then you can eat all you like.
For a moment, Naum does not respond. He does not understand. His colossal body, with its growths and its metal struts and its swollen armor plates, shifts uneasily. Dragon wonders what on earth he must be experiencing. Existence on this ship is already like a dream, or a nightmare, For Naum, the boundary between states has long since ceased to exist. All that remains is a fog of pain, of sensations he no longer has names for. He is not visibly enraged and psychotic as a hellbrute of Karnath might be, only obstinate.
"Eat them,"
Naum says at last, seeming to grasp something.
"Yes, as many as you like," says Dragan again,
feeling like a barrier has been broken. There is endurance, that is known. Some feats within this legion make the mind turn, some expressions of that old capacity for resilience. But for this, there are no words. Not that Dragan knows, anyway. What is left in there to endure? What remnant of an old willpower still burns away, refusing the siren embrace of complete insanity? Condensation runs down Naum's outer shell. In the dark, he flexes power claws bigger than Dragan's whole body. Ancient bone shards click, rotting flay skirts rustle. The eyes blink, once, twice, squeezing tears down wrinkled, ash-dry flesh. Then the black gums are exposed, something like a smile, or the dream image of one, semi-remembered and blurred by the fog of being.
"Show me," he says.
Night comes to Sabatine. This is the darkness of battle smog and burning wreckage, the pores over vehicle carcasses and gun emplacements, and it smothers the skies and engulfs the land. Slurt is there, along with his six battle squads of unbroken and hundreds of unchanged. The entire plain ahead of him is crawling, infantry masses and tank columns grinding and yammering under the flickering flame cover. It is hard to gauge numbers in the gloom and the movement, but there must be many tens of thousands of troops now engaged or moving to engage. Solace has landed almost all its unbroken, committing close to 600 to the battlefield. The Iamandar has landed, if anything more, and the Wordbearer's terror troops stalk through the drifting smog like dark crimson revenants. The Citadel has two land-facing gates, both encrusted with las cannons and overhung with defensive strongpoints. The Wordbearers are pushing towards the far gate on the northern flank of the battlefield, driving their armies of cultists straight into the fire lanes. It's brutal work, and they're losing hundreds. But the gap is closing, and now the mobile armor is beginning to find its mark. The orbital barrage has slowed now, cutting out as the invaders close in around the citadel in a huge swathe. It is replaced by a more targeted pattern of ranged fire, thumping volleys from the landed artillery lines and the first strafing runs from the atmospheric gunships. The enemy has its own flyers, but these are kept close to the citadel's protective las cover, hovering virtually under the eaves of the towers within. The exchange of solid round fire is blistering, carving tracer lines through the hot dark and lighting up the parapets in flashes of impact.
"By the god, they're weak now,"
comes a familiar voice at Slurt's shoulder. He turns to see Garstag stomping up behind him, kitted out for the siege warfare to come. He carries his chainsword two-handed, and his lenses flare a soft pale green in the murk. Three little lords cling one-handed to his pauldrons, swinging happily as the Cardane master swaggers.
"They don't have the guns to clear the plain," Garstag spits contemptuously. "Those walls won't hold long either."
Slurt shrugs, just as another arc of stone-eater artillery screams overhead to smash into the parapets beyond.
Maybe, he says. "Stronger than they look, I would suppose. So are you here to grumble, Garstag, or to get that blade wet?"
Garstag growls. He does not have much of a sense of humor.
"Just get me inside."
Slurt goes back to what he was doing. His position is a few hundred meters back from the southern gate's causeway, and the terrain in between is now seething with marching plague walkers. Few unbroken march with them, for the rate of attrition from the wall-mounted gunnery is brutal. Even the Death Guard tanks are holding back, though the largest of the super-heavies are beginning to find ways to blast holes in the parapets. Slurt's position is behind a cluster of jutting rocks, out of the most direct lines of fire, but well within striking distance of the walls. The vantage is boiling with activity, gangs of servitors and cultists from Solace toiling away with hulking equipment brought down by dropships. Vats have been dragged into place and are now chained together by tangled lengths of cabling. Most of the illumination comes from the dirty panes of armor glass, lime green and fervid orange, sweltering within the rusted together tanks. Plumes of backlit steam gust from the seals, dribbling virulent toxins from every valve. These are big containers, the largest nearly the size of a nightwalker, and the servitor crews tending them are hundreds strong. Slurt looks it all over. It has taken a long time to assemble under constant fire, and 6 feeder tanks were lost on the way down. It would be good to have more time, a little more space. It would always be good to have more time.
"Enact it, then," he says grudgingly. "Let's see what this world is made of."
The order gets barked down the line. Unbroken guards shuffle back, shoving aside the dumb clusters of servitors. A plaguebearer demon, seemingly lost, shambles past, limping awkwardly as it blunders out in search of prey. Levers are thrown, dials are spun, great wheels are hauled by teams of bloat-bellied plague ogrins, and the whole chained-together contraption clangs like a hollow bell. Witchlight belches from the exhausts, followed by inky spurts of foul oil. Clattering generators rattle into life, and the boom, boom, boom of industrial pumps makes the ground drum. There's a cough, a scrape, and then the tubes slam taut. Noxious fluids burst down feeder lines, snaking through a dozen connectors before reaching hydrant mouths and bursting out in a foaming torrent. Some of Slurt's attendants are too slow and get caught up in the deluge. The screams are short-lived. Their bodies dissolve down to the bone in moments. This is more than acid. This is one of Slurt's special brews, one of his matter-eating broths that just keeps on chewing. It swills out across the cracked and broken terrain, gallons and gallons of it, and the stone splinters and squeals. Steam shrieks up, violent and outraged, as the broth pours down channels and burns its way in further. This is burrow flay, or rot rock, or matachu, a species of demonic solvent with only a little less than half a mind of its own. Once released, it will worm and wriggle its way into any weak point it finds, prizing it and thinning it and rending solid matter down to a gunge of semi-warp-shifted molecules. Already, it has gouged a smoking well into the landscape ahead of them, and it is carrying on, sliding down under the crust and into the veins of stone beneath. The clouds of green steam billow, and the landscape reels. Slurt nods towards the Unbroken under his command, and they trudge after the retreating tide, splashing through the scummy liquid as it boils and chunters. How does this substance gnaw through solid rock, and yet leave Ceramite alone? How does it know where to swirl and where to slither away from? How can it understand where Slurt wishes it to go and do as he bids? Just one of the wonders of the Empyrean, the great benisons of enchantment. All things are possible with the god, if one is willing to suffer in order to learn, and Slurt has suffered so very greatly to gain this knowledge. His warriors have turbo drills and macro hammers. Some have great encrusted shields for warding the worst of the slop, and others haul tracked earthworkers and delving claws. In their wake come servitors with bracing rods and scaffolds, and slave gangs dragging lumen cables. Where the burrow flay chews, they pile in, descending quickly until their shoulders are soon at ground level and falling fast. They wade through the dissolving earth, carving out the tunnels that are already bending towards the distant citadel walls. Soon they will be underground entirely, shielded from the enemy's guns and following a subterranean path that will claw the very foundations of the walls from under their feet. Garstag grunts again. This is the closest he will ever get to issuing a compliment.
"How long?" he asks.
Slurt watches carefully. He has taken great care with the mix, and there are still things that can go wrong. But it is working thus far. working well.
"Leave the gates to the fanatics," he says carefully,
trying not to sound smug.
"You'll be inside that place within the hour."